It's Audiomo, 2020, day 27. Many people will probably be surprised to know that some female members of the armed forces were actually stationed in Europe during World War II while the fighting was going on. And Eileen was one of them. So in these recordings, she tells us about the Battle of the Bulge, all the way through to VE Day, and then how, as the war came to a close, she was asked to show RAF officers around Brindonk concentration camp in Belgium, something that stayed with her all her life.
The very worst time, actually, was over that Christmas, because the weather clamped down. And because of that, our aircraft couldn't go up. And in addition, it was the time of the Rundstedt Offensive, which I've only just realised was destined. I know it was destined to get to Antwerp, but what I didn't realise, we were 10, 15 kilometres away. We were on the line of being captured. We didn't realise it at the time. We didn't think about it. We just got on with our job. But after that, in the February, when the Battle of the Bulge finished, I had a Belgian friend who we played hockey with. We were very keen hockey players. We had a mixed team and we played the Belgian team. And I got to know a family, the Conrad family. And they had sawmills in the Ardennes. And they were really worried to know whether their men were still alive and whether the mill was still there. And Pierre said to me, "Eileen, if you've got a day off, I'm driving there. Would you like to come?" So we drove up to that area. Now, the snow that had been covering the whole of the area, of course, it was a very bad winter, was now melting. And as we approached the Ardennes, uncovered were the tanks, but also the dead bodies, the Germans, the French, the British, and mostly Americans, of course. And that was a horrific experience. We found that the mill was okay and the men were safe. Then we went into Bastogne, where a very big battle had taken place and the town was devastated. And that was a very chilling day, that trip. That was a very vital thing because they were trying to cut the British troops north of that line from the American troops, which were entering in from the French border. And it would have been a disaster if it had not been successful. Our repulse of that. It was only a few months ago, looking at the map, I thought, well, of course we were on the line. Never occurred to me at the time. You know, you do a job and you don't think of the ramifications. We were still on duty in the bank where we were tracking the V2s, and it went on, even though there were virtually none at all happening then. But we had to still be there just in case something else happened. And on the day of VE Day, I came off duty at 8 in the morning. We had a feeling that peace might be declared, but it wasn't definite. And as I came out of the bank where we were working to go across for breakfast at the mess, a little black car came to a sudden halt in front of me. And two pilots came out of it. They rushed up and hugged me and said, "You're the first English woman we have seen since 1940. And I saw on the car they'd written PWX, ex-prisoners of war. And they said we were shot down in our aircraft. And I think they said it was a Wellington bomber in 1940. And a few days ago, I think it was probably about 5 days before, the guards had started leaving the camp, taking their uniforms off, because they realised that the British troops would very soon overtake them and probably they would then be captured. And they managed to steal one of the SS cars, and they travelled only at night because they had no idea how far liberation had happened of Belgium and Holland. They must have been somewhere north of Hanover, I think. And they quietly worked their way through. They stole petrol from the fields, from the tractors. They dug up mangel wurzels or turnips and picked things off the bushes if there were fruit of any sort, and travelled only at night and then laid doggo during the day. And it was only when they got into Belgium and crossed over the border that they realised there was liberation. So they went on driving until that time at 8 o'clock at night. And I took them in the mess, gave them a big breakfast, and the CEO said to me, find out what they want to do. So I said to them, what do you want to do? We want to go back to Rotterdam to find the nurses that rescued us from the aircraft and give them some food, because food was so scarce. And of course, it was on the black market and everything. So the CEO said, right, fill up a big box. So I got the kitchen to fill a box. They said, take another WAF with you. You better stay with them. So the four of us then turned around and went back towards Rotterdam. And we got to the side of the river, and I think it's the River Scheldt. And when we got there, the bridges had been blown up. So we couldn't go over the bridge to get to Rotterdam. And we thought, how are we going to get this to them? And then we saw a man in a flat-bottom boat bringing supplies over. So we said to him, will you take us over? And he said, no, because the river is mined still. And, you know, it's not been cleared yet. And I just go over there and get food in this boat. I can take the supplies, but if I took people, we would hit the mines. So we gave them the address and the food. And I often wonder whether it ever got to the nurses, because food was so valuable and he could have made a lot of money on the black market. I don't know. I don't even know the name of the two pilots. We drove back and the CEO said to me, you look tired, you've been awake for 36 hours now. And I said, well, yes. So the medical officer gave me a sleeping tablet. So I went back to my billet, which was in a Belgian house, went to bed, and I thought, this is stupid, this is VE Day, because by then, at 11 o'clock, peace had been declared, that the Germans had given in. So I got up, put a new shirt on, went back to the mess, and the medical officer said, I thought this would happen. Take this. And he gave me a Benzedrine. So off I went in this little car with the two pilots and a couple of other WAF officers. We went into Brussels and celebrated VE Day there. We were given cakes and flowers and bottles of wine by the Belgians, all celebrating. At the beginning, I was very sleepy, but by the time the end of the evening came, everybody else was sleepy and I was bright as a button. It was the first time in my life I've had a downer followed by an upper. I got married 3 months before I was sent to Belgium, and I was away 8 to 9 months afterwards. So I was away longer than I'd ever known my husband. And when the war finished, or rather when VE Day happened, my husband assumed I'd be coming back straight away. But of course that didn't happen, because we all had to help get Belgium back into working condition again. And we were all given different jobs. And I had a job which I had no idea at the time when they told me what it was going to be, how it would affect me. And it was because my French was good. And they said, we want you to go to a camp called Brindonk. And we want you to take the troops round there. And then they told me it was known as the Camp of Silence and of Death. And it had initially been a holding camp early in the war for the Jews that the Germans put there immediately they captured Belgium. And then these Jews were sent straight to Auschwitz. But then they captured resistance leaders and soldiers, and they captured gypsies, and they captured homosexuals. And all these people together were put into that camp. The resistance people, they were tortured. It became the most terrible camp. I soon learnt why it was the Camp of Silence and of Death. I was taken every day in a truck and left there, and I had to walk in to this camp. And by then, it was full of people who were collaborators. In fact, many of them were eventually executed, and they were the Belgians who'd joined the Belgian SS and fought with the Germans. some of them as vicious as any of the Germans had been. And my job each day was to take a group of Royal Air Force personnel and let them know what had happened there. And I learnt gradually each day some of the more horrors that had happened. I used to have to take them into the punishment cells. And the punishment cells were mostly for resistance. And these people would be manacled with their hands above their head and their feet would be chained to the wall. Their hands would only be loosened when it was time to eat. Food would be pushed through a cat hole in the door, and like animals, they had to lie on the ground and eat. And that's if they had a special punishment. Sometimes they were just loose in that cell all the time. And in those days, the people used to scratch on the chalky walls, because it was a very old building. They used to put the days that they'd been prisoners, and they'd scratch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines, and one across, 7 days, another week of imprisonment. Some had written messages. There was the face of Christ on one of the walls, but the one I remember most was the words of one of the resistance fighters who'd written, "Betrayé par ma maîtresse, Léonardine Boisson of Courtrai." Betrayed by my mistress, Léonardine Boisson of Courtrai. And this was a resistance fighter who probably lost his life in the end because of his lover. I had to take them into the torture room. And this was pretty ghastly because there was a big butcher's block table. And the people would be laid on this table, and in all their damp orifices of their body, they would put electric currents. And when they passed out, they would be put on a truckle bed with slats. And many of the slats were broken. And I gather this was because the SS guards, in order to bring them back to consciousness, would stamp on their legs and probably break their legs and the slats at the same time. But what I thought was so awful was the organized cruelty, because the very next person to be tortured was put outside behind a short wall, hiding them from what was happening in there, and all they could hear were the sounds of the cruelty that these people were undergoing. And I just thought that was really controlled torture. And there were the poles outside, blooded posts, really, where many of them had been tied to when they were shot. I mean, they knew that eventually about the Jews, but they didn't say so much about the resistance people. I've got a French friend who lost his brother, Paul Larumeur. He's a dentist, and Penarth was twinned with Saint Paul de Léon. And because I was in a French group, we used to go over there and exchange. And I used to stay with Paul Larumeur. And Paul told me eventually about his brother. And this is the story of how, I gather, in the town they then lived in, some German soldiers were killed by the resistance. So the following Saturday, when all the young men were out on the town, they picked up 25 Frenchmen, anyone's out on the town. And his brother was one of them. And they never knew what happened to him. And he was one of the French people that was sent to the Harz Mountains underground, building the rockets after they'd moved from Peenemünde. And at the same time, there were Russians there, Russian prisoners of war. And they were virtually all starved because there was always more people that could go there and take on. But not only were the Germans starving them, if they did have food and perhaps they might keep a bit of bread under their pillow, the Russians stole it from them as well. It was a horrific time. The actual room itself, the punishment cells, I often wake up at night and see written on my walls the things that I'd seen. That memory has never left me.